Hello and welcome to the Auto Chat podcast. I'm Alistair Charlton, an automotive and technology journalist, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and fellow car enthusiast, George Turner.
Hello.
Hey George, mate. How are you?
Yes, good, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I was going to say it's been a couple of weeks as normal, but it's been a little bit more, hasn't it? We're a little bit late again this week. We're recording on Monday, so it could well be Tuesday or Wednesday by the time you actually hear this.
Yeah, it's Monday night.
I don't think we've done it on a Monday night before, have we? Have we recorded on a Monday?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, not that I remember. I tell you what, we haven't recorded on an evening when it's been daylight.
That's very true, yeah. It is. It's remarkably light still at whatever it is, 8 o'clock now. Yeah, it's lovely.
That's good. Summer is almost here. The sun is here.
It is.
The dry weather's here, just still freezing for some reason.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I thought the sun was beaming in through my window after work. I thought, I'll have some dinner. I'll go for a walk around the park. It was bloody freezing. So I came back home about 10 minutes later.
Have you frozen your bollocks off in a pub yet?
yes. Yes, I have. It's a bit of hit and miss about whether you get a heater or not, and if you're near one, and if it stays on. But no, it's been okay. The pubs I've been to three so far. And yeah, what's deemed an inside or an outside building seems to be up for debate, because some of the outside space is pretty well insulated. But that's been good. Have you been out anywhere?
Yeah, I've been to the local three times, I think.
Oh, lovely.
I actually went on the opening night on the Monday 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Following a game of touch rugby.
All right. Have you got a new hobby?
No.
Did you briefly have a new hobby?
Well, no, not even. I mean, it was just an embarrassment from start to finish. I have no interest in rugby. Absolutely no idea on the rules or how it works. And I sort of went along. Was invited by a friend who, and I was told, "Oh, it's fine." You know, I thought there might be a bit of tuition or a bit of practice first, but it was just straight into a game, and I was just nowhere near where I needed to be. And I was on a team with like adults and children, and the children were having like a pop at me, like, "Come on, what are you doing?" I was like, "Okay, I don't know." So to save face, I thought, well, I better go to the pub afterwards and like at least be sociable and not just be the world's crappiest rugby player and then sulk off home.
So touch rugby is, instead of proper tackling, is that the case, or it's less contact?
Yeah, so you just, I guess it's a similar pattern to normal rugby, but a touch is a tackle, and you have to kind of stop the play and restart the play. Mm-hmm. And I sort of started picking it up, but it's just something I've got very little interest in.
It's quite a complicated sport, I think, isn't it? It feels like there are lots more rules than there are with football, and lots more reasons to stop play than with football.
And bless these people, probably thought I'd sort of found them on Facebook and thought, right, I'm going to come along and play this. And they were really trying to help me, really nice people, but I was just in the end, just like, nah, look, I do enough sport.
And how did you end up there? Did you know someone?
Yeah, just a couple of my friends invited me, and I think they thought I knew more about it than I did. So
right.
But I think because my memories of rugby at school were pretty miserable memories. And actually, if we'd have just played touch at school, I probably would have enjoyed it a bit more and learnt the game rather than just pretend I'm not feeling very well on rugby day.
Yeah, my memories of rugby at school, it's just cold mud and a teacher that really wanted you to tackle properly, even though we knew we were probably only going to do it for two or three lessons maybe for a year. And we didn't have a team. There was no point, really.
They've probably changed it now. Schools have softened up a bit, I reckon.
Yeah, potentially. And it would be a bit more inviting, I think, for kids, wouldn't it, if it was just touch rugby? Because I quite enjoy watching rugby, and I think if some of the physicality was taken away in that regard, I would probably have wanted to play it more as a kid.
There was still some clattering around. One fully grown man did completely mow down a 12-year-old girl and made her cry.
Oh no.
But you know, that,
there's a video of Boris Johnson doing that, isn't there? It's quite tragic.
Yeah, sort of a similar thing. So yes, I have been to the pub. I've just poured myself quite a nice beer, actually. It's a Rochefort 10.
That rings a bell.
Yeah, it's like
we've had those in Bruges, haven't we? Or just at yours?
It's a strong one. I think it's like 11. But I'm just going to have one because it's Monday. So
yes.
I'm just going to enjoy this whilst we have this chat. Have you got a drink?
I've just got a small glass of whiskey on the go because I don't have any beers in or any wine. I didn't really fancy wine on a Monday night anyway. And I thought, well, I can't just sit here with a glass of water, can I? So yes, just got a small glass of whiskey.
Well, I've said I'd do a 10K in the morning, so I better not have any more. But I know that I've got a reasonably good chance of completing a 10K as opposed to being any good in a rugby match, so...
It's simpler, isn't it?
So what's been happening for you in the car world? We better talk about cars at some point.
We probably should. Yeah, it's been okay the last couple of weeks. I've been able to use my MX-5 a bit more. I feel I've bonded with it at last because I got this MX-5 that I was really looking forward to, and then I immediately had a few press cars in, so it didn't really get driven. But yeah, I've been out with it. It's been on a couple of good routes, good driving routes, and yeah, really enjoyed it. There's a cracking route actually that I found. Well, I didn't find. I was shown it by the Porsche's PR man. And I've just got a WhatsApp message, and I think it's the only message I've ever received from him, and it's just a Google Maps link. You click that, and it gives you this wonderful sort of three waypoints over sort of between Reading and Swindon kind of way. So I went out over there early one morning, and yeah, it was lovely. Roof down the whole way, heated seat on, nice and toasty. Enjoyed it. Came home and cleaned it thoroughly, as you do. So I got all the kit out and gave it a good clean and a polish and a bit of detailing, and yeah, it's good.
I've been enjoying it. I'm sure it was an amazing drive, and this road sounds awesome. MX-5s are great, so I kind of get that. What I'm interested in mainly is how you manage to clean a car on a road when you have no water access. Did you have to keep bringing buckets down off the...
No. I was sort of a little bit lazy and realised the majority of the dirt, because it was fully washed and polished and whatnot, by the dealer who sold it to me, and then it was brought here on a transporter, so it hadn't really been anywhere, and a lot of the dirt was just pollen, just, you know, dust. Yeah. So I just gave it a bit of a wipe down and then really thoroughly sort of went to town giving it a good clean with my various products and a clay bar to sort of lift some contamination out, and yeah, it's come up really nicely. The neighbours do look at me funny though. No one else washes their car.
Yeah, it's not really the done thing in London. You just let it get.
You have a man who does it
dusty,
for you,
or you take it to some people
who put a load of swirly marks on it for you.
Usually in the forecourt of what was a petrol station.
Yeah, it's usually an in between thing, isn't it? There was a garage in Southfields where we used to live, where I got my car service when I had that Mini. They disappeared. They sold the land for property development. But in that sort of brief window of time, it was a car wash. It's always the case. They find these little areas, little plots of land for 6 months. But no, keen to avoid somewhere like that. I'll just do it myself and then keep on top of it. I leave all the kit in the car as well. So whenever I've been for a drive, come home, give it a quick wipe down and all's good.
I suppose if you ever go to someone's house that's got an outside tap, you can be like, ooh. While I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'll just wash my car. Enjoy the barbecue. I'll be around in a bit.
No, glad you're enjoying it. And so far, no problems.
Not at all.
Like the previous one.
Not like the last one. It hasn't had to go back. So all's good. And I swapped the gear knob out for one I bought for the previous one. So I've got a nice sort of stainless steel gear knob. And I bought a little replacement for the aerial, because it's got a massive aerial on it. It makes it look like a remote controlled car. Don't really use that anyway. I use my phone for connection, so replaced it with just a little stubby aerial, which looks much better.
Is this the offside rear?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So my friend's 30th anniversary has a huge aerial. You don't tend to get aerials on modern cars. It's a bit of a throwback thing.
Yeah, it's a bit odd. Like, you don't really notice it at first, and when someone points it out to you, like, yeah, it looks ridiculous. And apparently the smaller aerial works just as well, even if you do use it for DAB. But I just use my phone, so yeah, makes it look better. So yeah, that's been me for the last sort of couple of weeks. And then I had an Alfa Romeo Stelvio in, which is their SUV, just over the last weekend, which I quite liked. I wouldn't ever really be interested in a car of that type, but I think if I was, I'd really consider the Alfa over, you know, a German equivalent, over a BMW or an Audi, just for the sake of being different, and I think it looks nice.
Yeah, they've kind of got that quirk of just being kind of a car, perhaps, maybe a brand that's overlooked by a lot of people, and then when you do... I mean, I really like the Giulia.
Yeah, that's a lovely car.
Was this Stelvio you had anything special, or was it like a more just, you know, was it just like a 2 litre diesel or something?
It was 2 litre petrol, yeah. It was a Lusso TI, I think it was called, 200. And it's perfectly pleasant. It was a nice spec, actually. It was a sort of a dark green and a brown leather, sort of dark brown leather interior. So quite a classy spec. And yeah, I liked it. I didn't see another one. The whole time I had the car, I thought, I'll see if I see any other ones anywhere. And I was in it for a good few hours, quite a lot of motorway driving over the weekend. Not a single one, which is a bit disappointing. I just don't think they're selling very well. I saw a couple of Giulias, but no Stelvios.
It's often when you get a car in your head, you start seeing them everywhere.
Mm.
So it's rare that when you're actually looking, you don't see one. So
see a single one.
I saw the point of view shot you took from the driver's seat, and I thought the steering wheel and dash looked really good.
Yeah, it does. It's really nice. They've thought about it. It's quite similar to the Giulia, from what I can remember. Just sort of scaled up a little bit, sort of SUV sized. But yeah, it's really nice. You've got the two sort of large circular sort of instruments or hoods, aren't they? Sort of hoods over the dials. Nice steering wheel. Massive paddles, massive gear change paddles, which are completely overkill. I don't know why they're there. They look like they're straight off a Ferrari or something. And they do kind of block access to the stalks a little bit. But yeah, it looks great. Really, really likes the interior.
I think Kimi Räikkönen has one, so they say.
I believe there's probably one in his name somewhere through his contractual arrangements. Yeah,
because him and Mintu are in the adverts for it, aren't they?
Yeah, the bookend ads, every single ad break on the Formula One coverage.
Yeah,
is him driving around Monaco.
Because obviously Alfa Romeo thought, oh, we've got Mr. Charisma here. We can put him straight into the adverts. But I think all he does is he winds the window down and just sort of smiles and nods, doesn't he? And winds the window back up.
I couldn't tell what he says. He's got about two lines in this advert, and it's played, you know, a dozen times a weekend when the F1's on. I can't quite tell what it is that he says. It's something like, I don't know what it is. It's like something about watching time. I don't know. But it's a strange advert, and you can't really tell what he says. But it's memorable, I guess.
And I'm assuming that's his actual wife who's in it as well. And that's just...
I've no idea.
Because he's sitting next to a woman.
I suppose so. Yeah.
You know, whatever. I'm sure that was part of his contract. But apparently, according to sources, Kimi does drive one back at home in Finland with the kids in the back.
Permanently sideways, I hope.
I think he's got the four-wheel drive one. So, and there's probably plenty of snow on the road, so yeah.
so yeah, that's been me, I think. Not much else going on. What have you been up to? You've been busy.
Yeah, I've been pretty busy doing lots of work that's not my actual job. But it's keeping me occupied, you know, whilst the aviation industry is doing absolutely nothing. And I think it could be a few more months yet, unfortunately. There you go. I don't know where we were on the last podcast, but I had to change the rear coil springs on my Volkswagen.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was aware that one was broken. And then when it got took apart, there was two broken, so I'm glad I bought two. And then I took it for its MOT, and I said to my MOT guy, you know, this is it. I've done the brakes, done the rear coils, car is in peak condition. Get a phone call an hour later. One of the front coils was broken. So it had three broken coil springs. So all four have now been replaced. So I've got the best ride of an old Passat in the country, probably.
Good. Well, it's good that you were able to do a lot of that work yourself.
Yeah, it still costs an arm and a leg, but there you go. So that's all working good. But then I drove it to Dorset this weekend, and it's got a wobbly wing mirror.
Oh.
So I've been told that's an easy fix.
Is that the housing or the glass?
No, it's the mirror itself. Yeah. Apparently the glue that's holding it on is just gone. So I was driving for like 8 hours over the weekend, just in the corner of my eye, this wobbly wing mirror flapping away. So that's something I think I'll do tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then Saturday I've got to say farewell to the old Victor.
Oh, it's finally going, is it?
It is. I'm sort of a bit disappointed I'm disappointed to see it go, but I'm also disappointed that I'm probably giving it on in a worse condition than I received it.
Oh.
Because I just cannot seem to get past a couple of issues.
Mm.
And we have tried.
You said for a while it just hasn't been running too well.
Yeah, it just sort of is a bit lumpy, a bit bumpy, a bit not very smooth. And the clutch is on its way out as well. So you get a bit of clutch slip, and that's too big a job for me to do in the garage. So, yeah, it's going to be passed on, and I'm just a bit, you know, I don't want to upset the person that's getting it, but I've got to send him an email saying, right, be prepared because it's X, Y, and Z. So we're meeting in Northamptonshire, and the person who's taking it off me has got to drive it up to Leeds, so...
Right, God.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a first journey.
It is, but the person I'm giving it to has been a part of the project for 2 years, the same as myself, with a car that was even older. Okay. So I'm hoping she's got plenty of classic experience, so...
Mm-hmm. Good.
I think we'll have to do a quick half an hour driving lesson, and then...
Yeah.
I'll let her get on with it. And then as soon as Sunday, the new car should be arriving.
Oh, good. Well, I was going to ask, is it you getting that so soon?
Yeah, it's one out, one in.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to my MG Maestro experience.
You feel you get to use it a lot more often, do you think, than the Victor? Especially given the Victor's current
If I love it as much as I think I'll love it, I think I'll want to drive it every day.
It will suit you. Definitely.
Oh, it's very me, sort of a drab 80s car. But I
just plodding along on the inside lane with some absolute banging tunes on. Perfect.
Well, I mean, it's a 2 litre, so it should shift. So I'm not too worried about being slow. I think it just, you know, it's just not to everyone's taste, but I like it.
No, good. I'm looking forward to seeing. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
Yeah, well, we've got Caffeine and Machine booked for a few weeks' time, so hopefully we can do that.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. Do you follow them on Instagram? They're always posting sort of in the yard and what events they're doing.
I actually don't. I mean, do you think there'll be any other MG Maestros there?
I wouldn't have thought so. But you'll probably get some attention because it's immaculate and it's unusual. And that seems to be what goes down well there, is just you do get like the odd generic Ferrari or whatever parked up in the sort of the prime positions, but you get a lot of quirky stuff as well.
That's it. Nobody likes to show off.
I think it'll go down quite well. No, I'm looking forward to that. Be good.
So that's what's been happening here. Dodgy rugby and dodgy cars.
I don't know why I'm talking about this, but a couple of sort of parking incidents I witnessed over the last couple of days that I thought I'd share very quickly. One was... when I was cleaning my car the other day, I was just giving it a polish. I was out there for a while, and a neighbour parked up in front of me in one of those massive Mercedes SUVs, not a G-Wagon, a GLS, I think they are. Great big tank.
Yeah.
And I didn't really pay her much attention. I just saw someone's parking in the space in front of me. I'll just leave her to get on with it. And I was listening. I thought, oh, that car's taking a while. And I turned around, and it wasn't a case of it against the curb. It was more than a wheel's width was on the pavement. The entire right-hand rear wheel and then some was on the pavement. Not quite sure how that happened, so I thought, I'll get in my car, move it back, you know, a space worth to give them plenty of room. And it was still another sort of 5 minutes or so. And I just thought it was amusing to see this car quite literally on the pavement.
My first thought is...
it must have cameras and sensors and stuff.
Would it not have the auto park feature?
Yeah.
Because my friend's 2016 A-Class has that.
Mm.
So
unless I'm being terribly mean here, and it was actually the autopilot that completely bollocks it up. I don't know, but yeah, it was very much not in the space. And so I feel bad for laughing at people's parking misfortune, but I was at Goodwood and I saw someone pull up in this lovely old classic Mini estate. I think I put a photo of it on Instagram, or on an Instagram story, a sort of commercial estate, yeah, that had like a company name down the side, and it looked really nice, sort of a minivan type thing. And just reversed it straight into a wooden post in front of quite a lot of people. Ugh. And yeah, I just felt so bad. I think because they'd looked in the mirrors and seen like clear air either side, clear space either side, but the post was right in the middle and it's got no rear glass. So yeah, straight into that. And it was a metal number plate hitting a wooden post, so it made a real noise. I thought, oh God, oh. I mean, when you stood watching an incident and you think, that's not going to happen. And it does. And you think, I could have said something.
Yeah. Oh dear.
I just didn't think that was going to happen. Anyway.
Well, I won't try and park anywhere near you.
No, I think I'm cursed. Soon.
I think, well, yeah. I went out, I took the Victor out the other week when I went for a run and I had to parallel park it.
Mm.
Which is fairly easy in the sense that it's quite narrow and it's you've got great vision, but you've also got no power steering. So I had a full arm workout trying to get this into a space. But you can park that, you know, a foot away from the curb and you're still narrower than any other car on the street, yeah. So you're good. And parking around your way, I've noticed in London the curbs tend to like point outwards, so even if you do get aggressive. Too close to the curb, it's hitting the wheel before it hits the tyre, you know?
That's true, yeah. I have had that before, where I've nicked an alloy and it's not right up by the rim, by the tyre, it's sort of further up the spoke, because, yeah, like say the curb's kind of angled outwards.
They taper outwards aggressively. Yes. There.
That's exactly it. Did you watch... Well, I was going to say, did you watch the Monaco Historic? But there's been some Formula One, hasn't there? Has there since we last spoke or not?
Yeah,
I'm losing track of when the
Imola,
races were.
Imola happened.
Imola, yes, that was
last Sunday.
Yep,
I really enjoyed that one. Again, nice. It seems to be more red flags these days, but it does give you more of an afternoon's worth.
Yeah, it does. Feels like you get two races.
It's not just all over in an hour and a half. There's okay, we're going to stop it for 20 minutes and clear the track up.
Yeah,
which they tend to be doing more of, for safety. But yeah, it was a good afternoon. Spent it actually watching it with a friend. So that was nice. You know, been watching it on my own for the past however long.
Yeah.
So yeah, a few beers, watched the F1. Thought that...
Good stuff.
I was glad that Verstappen won because that sort of kept the championship fairly close. And I thought Lewis Hamilton was incredible. The fact he managed to hit the wall... I thought he was out of the race and then did.
I thought he would have beached it, surely.
Like a proper dad reverse maneuver.
It was the slowest a Formula One car has ever moved.
Reversed it all the way back onto the track, carried on, came second. So, yeah. Well, mostly thanks to.
He got very lucky with the red flag.
Yeah, his.
Or with the. Was it with the red flag?
Yeah, it was his teammate.
Yeah.
And future teammate.
Of course, yes, yeah.
Or perhaps not future teammate now. that was all a bit of a pantomime.
That was a bit, wasn't it?
Because, you know, I'm a big George Russell fan, so of course the camera cut to that crash and you just saw, you know, a scene of absolute, you know, there was carbon fibre everywhere, two very broken cars. And when Russell went over there and started having a go at Bottas, I was like, yeah, give him, tell him, George, tell him, you know. Like. And then you watch it back and you think, ooh,
no.
Maybe Russell could have done a bit better there.
Yeah.
Or at least at least not got you know, done all the theatricals.
Just not put it on the grass. And then to go and, in his face. And he only tapped him on the helmet, didn't he? But it's just, you can't be doing that now.
Especially if you want that seat next year.
Not exactly. Yeah, it's a surefire way to piss off your future employer. Or your current employer.
But it sort of detracted from the point that Russell in the Williams was overtaking Bottas in the Mercedes for position.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, quite what Bottas was up to end up in that situation.
If anything, it did Bottas a favour, because I think he came out of it looking better.
Mm.
And it just, you know, I think had he have finished the race down in sort of 10th, everyone would have been going, well, what a waste of space he is. So might have done him a favour.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But certainly hasn't done Russell any favours. And the McLarens looked good, which is nice to see.
Yes. My memory of the race is a little bit hazy because I missed it during the day. I was at a barbecue and I got back sort of quite drunk and watched it at about 10 o'clock on the Sunday evening. So, go on. Lando did well again, didn't he?
Yeah, Norris had a good race. The Ferraris looked a bit handier. I think when Perez can keep it clean, he'll be up the front there somewhere. So, just looking forward to a good season. And they've made a fairly big announcement today on with regards to these sprint races.
Yeah, they have. Every time this sort of evolves, I'm always surprised at how quickly it's happened, because it feels like it was only sort of suggested as a potential option quite recently, and they went, okay, we'll give it a go. And now they said, this is it. This is what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it? What are they doing?
Well, instead of sort of Saturday qualifying, they're going to do a Saturday sprint race, which decides the grid for Sunday.
Hmm.
So these sprint races are going to be 100 kilometres. So that's a third of a race distance.
Yeah.
It's basically just to decide the grid. And there's only 6 points on offer. 3 for the first, 2 for second, mm-hmm. and 1 for third. No mm-hmm. pit stops. Okay. There's a choice of 2 sets of tyres.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try it 3 rounds. And the rumour is that it's going to be British Grand Prix, Monza and Interlagos.
Okay.
So there'll be, but there'll still be a standard qualifying session, but just on the Friday.
Right. Yeah, I was about to say. So how is the Saturday grid determined? You get, that's with qualifying on Friday.
Essentially, you get more bang for your buck here because
on
a Friday you've got a practice session and then a normal qualifying session. On Saturday, mm-hmm. you get another practice session and this quick, probably about mm-hmm. half an hour sprint race. And then Sunday you get your normal Grand Prix. So it's definitely giving the fans more action. I'll be very interested to see how the teams and the drivers deal with it, whether they are going to value the Sunday over the Saturday and whatnot else, and how it affects. Because obviously the engines have got to last the season. There's a cap on all of that.
Yeah.
A cap on whatever else component-wise that are now going to be put through additional stress. So whether or not some of the bigger teams hold back for Sunday, or whether or not they just go for it as normal and we see more mechanicals or retirements or whatever. Be interesting.
Mm.
But
it will. I'm really excited for this, but I've got an awful feeling it will be like you said, and the teams will go, well, what's the most efficient way of going about this? And could we get to the point in the season where they choose not to take part? Surely not. If you're running out of gearboxes or engines?
I wouldn't have thought so, but it'd be interesting to see how that all pans out.
I think it's great. I think it's exactly what the sport needs, because it takes up a lot of time on television. And I know it's not really on the main channels anymore live, at least in the UK. I don't know what it's like in other countries. But I think to win back that mainstream audience, or a more casual audience, a larger audience, certainly, it needs a little bit more entertainment. And as much as we are happy to sit and watch a qualifying session or even practice session, I think that there are more people who would watch this Saturday sprint race and enjoy it, especially if they've just heard, off their motorsport friend, this thing that they're doing where it's just this really short half-hour race and there's no real strategy, there are no pit stops, it's just go for it. I think that's quite exciting.
Certainly is. I mean, it'd be interesting to see, because if qualifying gets moved to a Friday, for the majority of people, they're at work on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Are people still going to tune into qualifying, which I think is still quite an exciting part of a Grand Prix weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But then for me, being a shift worker, it just means that most of the time I'll just miss loads of racing because no doubt I'll be at work for all of this and miss it all. So we see, it'd be good to see how that goes. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
It's sort of a bit of a first in Formula One history, I guess. It's been a very stale qualifying, then race. It's been like that for forever. So it'd be interesting to see how this shakes it up.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait for that. I think that'd be brilliant. Good to see them doing something different and not resorting to Bernie's sprinklers.
Yeah, although I do love a bit of a wet race. I mean, last Sunday as an example, you know. As soon as there was a bit of rain on the track, you know, you started to see who had some skill.
Yeah.
Or how easy it is to drop one of them things off the circuit, you know, tiny bit of water and it changes the game.
Yeah.
And actually Nikita... No,
I was thrilled to see it was a wet start.
Nikita Mazepin actually lasted the race distance, which surprised
me. Oh, did he? I forgot to check the website to see if he had spun again.
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, he might have spun, to be fair, but he at least finished the race, but he was miles down.
Good.
I think
good for him.
Mick Schumacher hit the wall, destroyed the car, did a pit stop, came back on track and was, you know, miles behind everyone. And then we looked a bit later and we were like, he's 30 seconds ahead of Mazepin. How's that happened?
Oh, dear.
There's talk of Dimitri Mazepin buying a team, isn't there, at the minute, I think. So.
Oh, I don't know. No, I've not heard about that.
Yeah, I think that's a rumour going around. So could be we're stuck with the Mazepins for a while.
Do you think he'd buy the Haas team? Because Gene Haas is used to better results, isn't he, in other forms of motorsport? Surely he must be getting a bit tired of it.
Yeah, well, I can't see Haas staying around that longer. I mean, they were kind of very American. Yeah. Say Gene Haas has been really successful in like IndyCar or whatever. And then they've sort of sold out already to the Russians. I mean, the car looks like a massive Russian flag.
Yeah.
They're just doing terribly, really. The car looks like an absolute beast to drive. It's miles off the pace. So yeah. I almost feel like they've given up already.
Their Drive to Survive episode next year is going to be good, isn't it?
I actually saw Gunther a picture again. Of Gunther. He used to be something at Ford. I've got a picture of him stood next to like a Mark 1 Focus doing some sort of demonstration video.
I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know if it's true or not. I'll just see it be on the screenshots on my phone. There he is. Gunther Steiner, Director of Engineering at Ford, and he's standing next to an ex-Reg Focus.
Huh. So if he's the man responsible for making the original Focus a good handling car, then... That's enormous praise.
Yeah, and he's excellent vocabulary. I'm really surprised that Ford used him on a promotional video. But like, look at this f***ing Focus. You buy a Vauxhall Astra, you look like a f***ing idiot.
What was he said in that speech? Is like, we're your winners or your wankers? And I think he said his team's currently wankers.
We look like a bunch of fucking wankers.
Still the case. That's the one.
Great vocabulary.
Excellent. What the sport needs, really.
Something quite awesome about someone of... Is he German? So obviously... English is not his first language.
Austrian, I imagine. Yeah.
English is not his first language, but he still manages to perfectly punctuate sentences with swear words.
The Germans do quite enjoy a good swear, don't they? Because there's that BMW advert that we covered a few weeks ago where they were calling their own car bullshit, and I think it's just seen as a much lesser insult. I think maybe that extends to sort of more fruity swearing as well.
Yeah, well, a good character. I hope he stays around, whatever happens. Just have him on the coverage, mate, doing the commentary. Like, be fantastic.
Can he be a pundit?
Gunther Vision, I'd watch it.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Gunther's... F1 coverage after 10 o'clock on the Sunday evening. Gunther gives his opinion.
Which is basically when you get it on Channel 4. So 10 hours after the race, you can have Gunther on the late night edition.
Gunther Steiner and David Coulthard, half cut.
He's got a big old stein of beer to sit in with, DC.
Eddie Jordan, bring him back.
No, let's not bring back Eddie Jordan.
I'm just thinking it'd be funny in that kind of environment, but no.
Possibly. Was it the old White Jeans Brigade when they all used to present the coverage here in DC? and their tighty whities. Yeah, and their tighty whities. Not my favourite era of Formula One coverage.
I haven't seen the Channel 4 coverage for ages. I don't know if that's still the case.
I'm a bit of a Brundle loyalist. Do like yeah, a me bit. Too. F1's just not right without Brundle.
Yeah.
So.
I agree. I'd go where he goes.
To just watch the Sky coverage, unless I've missed it, in which case I watch the Channel 4 highlights.
I almost had a bit of a breakdown coming in to watch that race because I'd carefully not heard anything about it the whole day. I had all the group chats muted, got home, right, put the F1 on, went to the recording on the Skybox, pressed play, and the first frame I saw was of a podium.
Oh, no.
There was no one on it. And on the timeline, it was like 20 minutes from the end of the programme. I thought, why the hell has it done that?
Had Rupert already watched it?
Shit. No, I don't think he had. I don't know what happened. Anyway, he heard me making a bit of a commotion. And came and sorted it for me. And then I was thrilled to see that it was raining or at least wet at the start because I'd had no idea.
It's very rare when you miss one that you don't find out the result.
Yeah, I did well. I was pleased with myself.
It's always a very pleasing evening on a Sunday when you think, God, I've managed to get this far without... The problem is there'll be like a bit during the race where it's got a little bit, you know, they're just going around, nothing's really happening, and you think, oh, I'll just check my phone, and you've forgotten that you're not supposed to be checking your phone.
Yeah. And it's like, too easy to do. And you just hope nothing massive happens, because then someone who isn't in your immediate sort of motorsport social group might message you anyway.
I think if something massive happens, take, for example, the Grosjean incident at Bahrain. I know for a fact that I would have found out about that because even if I muted all the group chats from like my Formula One fan friends, someone would have come in or I'd have seen it on the news or... I sort of know when
your dad will text you or something.
When I don't watch it live and I haven't had a message to say something incredible's happened, I know something incredible probably hasn't happened.
That's true, yeah.
But there you go. I'm sort of being off work is great at the moment, furlough, because I can watch every race. And then if I go back to work in July, I'm looking at all my shifts thinking, oh, I'm going to miss this one, I'm going to miss that one. I'm going to miss the season finale. But who knows? Maybe I'll have some holiday left and I can just take a day off for it.
Yeah.
Well, last year I took like odd hours. If I finished work at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd take like 2 hours off and zip home. in time to see it. So
brilliant.
Well, actually did our first race of the go-kart season.
I was about to say, you did a bit of motorsport of your own this week.
Yeah, well that's why we couldn't record on Friday, because I was down in Dorset.
Yeah,
down in a Premier Inn in Weymouth. I went to the beach and I stayed in a hotel and we went out for dinner and it was bloody freezing.
Yeah, I bet it was.
We were sitting on Weymouth seafront and the wind was just howling. I was like, Chris, if we order food, the second it comes out, it's going to be like refrozen. So we had to find the pub with like the most shelter. And we played gas, whatever it is, roulette, and we came up trumps. Third pub we went to had a decent
patio heater
behind roulette. Us.
Yeah.
So we stayed with that one. So it was quite nice going across country to Dorset, having a few beers. We did Friday testing, which was good fun because there's absolutely no pressure on you. Just go out there, fling the cart around. It's the first time I've been out this year, so.
It's just a driving experience at that point, really, isn't it? It is a good laugh.
Enjoyed flinging a cart round. As usual, got a terrible night's sleep in a budget hotel. Just purely because every time I book a hotel, thinking, well, that's better than getting up in the early hours of the morning and doing a long drive. And then you never sleep and you think, Christ, I'd have got more sleep if I'd have slept at home and got up at 4 a.m. But yeah.
How did you get on?
Yeah, well, we qualified 25th out of 36, which is not really good enough in our opinion. Yeah. So we gave our cart back and got a new one. So this is kind of how our championship works. They're rented carts. and they are meant to be all the same, but mm-hmm. there are subtle differences. And this one we felt was not in our favour. So we shopped it in and we got a new one. And the penalty for doing that is starting from the back of the grid. So we started 36th mm-hmm. and last. And we spent the afternoon just kind of smashing past everyone. And we came 6th in the end. So yes.
Bloody well, yes.
It was one of them bright, sunny days where we seemed to have a good pace. And we were just carving our way through. Lots of people getting penalties and having incidents. Mm. And we just seemed to just sail through all the way up to 6th place. So we were quite pleased with ourselves.
Good stuff. Very good. Yeah, it sounds good. And it was a nice, sunny, dry day as well, wasn't it? So
yeah, the whole weekend was sunny, dry, quite windy, but that kept us cool. even found a really nice pub afterwards for lunch and a pint and a debrief before driving back from Dorset. So,
yeah,
as they go, that's kind of my, you know, a classic karting weekend. A few drinks on the Friday, brilliant. A bit of carefree testing, and then a good race Saturday, followed by another beer and a bit of lunch, and then a nice drive home, albeit with my wobbly wing mirror. I even had a decent crash in testing as well, which is part of testing.
Did
I
you?
Think. Yeah, just someone in front of me span, and I just locked it up.
So you don't drop it very often.
I should never have said that on this podcast that I, because ever since then just crash central. But someone in front of me
not your fault though.
Someone in front of me spun out, so I just kind of. I just kind of joined them really because the track was blocked in front of me, so I just locked up and I was heading for the wall fairly quickly and I just closed my eyes, tensed up and then walloped the wall and it was okay, thankfully. And I put the cart back on the track and I ran back and rearranged the tyre barrier like the absolute sport that I am.
That's such a George Turner thing.
I could see the marshal.
Terribly sorry for damaging the tyre wall.
The marshal was out there and I could see he was trying to run across the track to do it. And I just thought, oh, do you know what? I'll save him a job. I'll rearrange the tyres for him. Because I'd punched a hole through the tyres and ended up sort of in the armco. I'd left the armco exposed. Right. So I was like, okay, I need to just cover that back up.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Proper little off then.
Yeah. And the next one in 3 weeks is the day before we're going to Caffeine and Machine. So I'm hoping to take the MG up there.
Good stuff. And where is that?
Wilton Mill, the next race. Northamptonshire.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll see if we can build. I sort of think we're in the top class of this championship we do. Hmm. But honestly, the top to get a top five is just impossible. I mean, the caliber of competition we're racing against is just insane. So for us, I think a sixth is really good, especially from the back. If we can get a top five, I think we'll be really, really pleased.
Yeah,
I do think a podium's going to take some big problems for other teams. But there you go. I mean, there are three classes at the moment: Premier, Clubman, and Intermediate. And I've always felt like we've always pushed ourselves and been in the. This is our ninth season.
Oh God, has it been this so long?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I felt like we've always been in the right league where we've been pushing ourselves.
Yeah.
And to get a good result is to come, you know, top five or something in that particular league. And there are other teams out there that annoy me a little bit because they refuse to move up a division.
They sit in a lower league where they know they can win.
Yeah.
They know they can get podiums.
There's one.
And to your credit, like I say, you've always tried to go to the next league to make it more difficult for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few chaps, someone won one of the classes at the weekend who, in my opinion, I mean, they always win, this team, because they're always in the lower division. And you just think, come on, push yourselves. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Well done. You've got. But I think some of these people like to go home with their trophy and shag the missus and pretend they're bloody winning.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be too much clatter if you just got a trophy every week, wouldn't it?
I'm going to say the big old pots, though, aren't they?
Yeah, so I don't know what some of these
people
do. It
would be quite amusing for you to win a trophy and then just have it casually in the MG at Caffeine and Machine the next day.
Oh, that would be amazing. Like a
big bit of silverware in the back of the
ice. Yeah, like, what have you won in that?
No, it sounds good. Good. I'm sure you're very pleased to be back out there and getting going again.
Yes. And then I've got, just something that I thought of to talk about in this particular episode.
Yep.
Which has struck me recently is the cars being used by delivery people during the pandemic, especially. Because gone are the days where a van pulls up and delivers your parcel. Well, especially where I live. And now it seems to be just an unmarked civilian car with people, I guess, who are probably furloughed, who are doing Hermes round.
Yep.
In their spare time. But what kind of got me onto this is we've got one delivery driver who I think might be Hermes. He's one of them. And he doesn't normally come round till sort of evening time. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing he's like really killing it in terms of how much he's delivering during the day.
Yeah.
He has a P-Reg Nissan Serena.
Ooh.
And this thing is dirty. It's white, but it's like black with dirt. And he's got all the seats stripped out, apart from the front two.
So that's normally what, a 7-seat minivan or more, isn't it? 8?
Yeah, I think it's at least a 7.
Yeah.
And that's got to be, what, 96? A P-Reg? So it's like 25 years old.
Around there. Yeah, yeah.
He probably picked it up for absolute peanuts.
Yeah.
And he's probably doing a fair amount of mileage in it, delivering these packages.
But the space he's got in there.
Yeah.
Taking the seats out. It's genius.
I spoke to my friend who I normally work with, who's doing Hermes deliveries. And he had quite a nice Audi, I want to say S3.
Mm-hmm.
Which I believe has done almost too many miles for its agreement, so to speak.
Ah, right, yeah.
So he bought a Vauxhall Combo van, which, you know, sort of a reasonably, probably 15-year-old one, 10 or 15 years old, to do these deliveries in. Because he said, basically, you get 75 pence a parcel, so the more you can take in the van, the more you're going to get paid at the end of the day. So I thought, well, that's a good idea. So I'm guessing this is what Nissan Serena Man has done. He's thought, well, actually, what's cheaper than buying an actual panel van is to just buy a van. Yeah. And it doesn't matter that it was once Britain's slowest accelerating vehicle because you don't need to really go that fast door to door. Did you know it actually did 0-60 in 27.8 seconds?
I was gonna say about 28. That was the figure I had in my head. That's really slow.
Yeah, like irritating.
Really, really, really slow.
If you pulled onto the motorway behind that, you'd be...
It's almost dangerous, isn't it? Like you say, down a slip road.
And we've got another lady that comes in a Nissan Navari, another huge.
Oh yeah.
Sort of. Well, I call it like a penis extension kind of. Like it's a pickup truck that's not a pickup truck that's got the terrible rear seats.
And is that sort of a pickup that's got a 4-seat cab?
Yeah,
four-door cab and a pickup.
And the sort of plastic bit over the
pickup section. Yeah, another one.
But all I thought was, well, okay, you've got great room there, but probably horrific fuel consumption.
Oh yeah, yeah, I bet.
So she's losing several pence per delivery.
Yeah, she hasn't thought that one through.
Serena Man.
Serena Man.
I did kind of think about doing it myself. And I just thought, I don't want to put the car through the pain of the stopping and the starting. And
it's quite torturous, isn't it?
Constant probably parking, you know. And
yeah.
I just thought, no, it's not for me that. I thought if I was to do it, I was going to buy an absolute shitbox to do it in. I was going to find something cheap that I just didn't care about, that I could just...
Just the cheapest thing you could find, or would size matter, so to speak?
Well, it would have to be kind of cheap and spacious. I'm thinking that I'd have probably got something like a Focus Estate.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have been, probably a Mark II Focus Estate.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because the Mark I's are starting to go up in value a little bit.
They are a little bit. I don't know about estates, but yeah, Mark I Focus, if tidy ones are getting
so more expensive. You're now looking at the sort of 2005 Mark II's, and they were shit. Yeah. So they're like, they're at the bottom of their
curve. Again, you could take the back seats out, make it easier.
Yeah. Well, when I spoke to my friend who's doing this, he said that one of the, there's three at his place, bearing in mind we're nowhere near London, really, there's three London cabs doing it, or former. Right. London cabs. So they'd probably pick those up cheap. You know, one of the old kind of diesel.
An old million mile TX5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said there's three of them that go into his depot. I thought that's not a bad shout because they'll do the fuel mileage you want. They've got
great turning circle.
Good turning circles. No speed, but you don't need that.
Yeah, yeah. Good amount of space. Big sort of boxy amount of space. Easy to get in and out of.
I mean, do you have weird delivery vehicles in your area?
A little bit.
I'm guessing in London.
Well, we don't really see the vehicle because we're in a flat. So, and often, like, since the pandemic, it's just been a case of they ring the buzzer and you say, oh, leave it downstairs, and you buzz them in and they just leave it downstairs. So I haven't seen much. But there was a couple that have stuck in my mind. One is during the first lockdown, we had, again, one of these people who I assume is furloughed or whatever and is doing her mayor's job on the side, and it was just this incredibly well-spoken sort of middle-aged lady, and it was just quite amusing, really, because it's just not the voice you expect when you pick up the handset to buzz someone in downstairs. It was like, oh, hello, I've got a parcel for you, which I thought was quite nice. And
that wasn't that when your mum ordered you something from Fortnum and Mason, was it?
No, it really is a Hermes person. No, that Fortnum's driver crashed. That van never turned up. There was an incident.
Oh, yeah. With,
what courier was it? I'm trying to think. It was one of the normal couriers. But yes, there was an incident, the courier told me. Anyway, what was the other? Oh, yes, and I saw this the other day. I was walking back to the flat, and traffic on this road is absolutely horrendous, Battersea Park Road. Awful traffic. Yeah,
it's a bad one.
And I saw an Amazon van, one of the branded Amazon vans. The driver was just sat in traffic. He jumped out and started delivering. Went and ran out with a few parcels, knocked on a load of doors, threw the parcels at everyone, ran back to the van. And it was fine. He timed it perfectly. Just left his van sitting in traffic, like, idling.
I have spoken to some people at work that do it in pairs.
Right, so then your co-driver can move. Well, you move the van along, and your co-driver is running around with the parcels.
But you're only looking at you're half in your pence per parcel. Yes. But you're potentially upping your fun per parcel because you can obviously have a laugh.
You're not
with
parking.
Yeah, you're not having to do as much driving, and you know it's probably a laugh if you're doing it with your mate.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely. Although, have you ever sort of gone to track a parcel and see the route that that van is doing that day? It's just the worst thing, isn't it? They're just going up and down, up and down, up and down, the same sort of few little roads every single day. I think it would drive me mad.
Being a former GIS man, a map maker.
What's the most efficient route?
I feel like it would make me a bit upset if I saw some seriously inefficient route planning.
I'm just thinking for the driver's well-being. I'd get really fed up doing exactly the same route day in, day out, covering every single road. But you're right, it's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it's for me. I did know someone that started delivering like Chinese, and he was said like at the end of every night it was like a chicken chow mein on the house. I assume he was getting paid alongside the free food he was eating every night.
I mean, you'd hope so.
But then your car's gonna just stink of takeaway, isn't it?
There was that trick that used to happen a lot at our old house where with Uber Eats it would often say the person was on a bicycle, and they weren't. They just turned in a car with two of their mates. And I asked someone once, I asked one of the delivery drivers, he said, oh yeah, it's just a scam. I think it's like a, I don't know if it's like a tax thing or insurance thing or what, but delivery drivers just saying or telling Uber that they're on a bicycle when they're using a car instead.
Well, in your neck of the woods, it's probably no quicker to drive than cycle or vice versa. There's probably not a lot of time difference in the traffic and the narrow
streets. No, that's
true.
They can take shortcuts as well, actually. Mopeds especially, I've seen clattering over curbs and just going through housing estates to take a shortcut between two roads. That happens quite a lot. But
people are always happy to see their food delivery, aren't they?
So, I mean, it's worth it.
You don't care. Cut across whatever you want. Bring me the food before it gets cold.
Yeah, yeah.
I did have one delivered the other day. It was some clothes I'd ordered, and it said on the thing delivered, but it hadn't been delivered. Mm. I was sort of, you know, looking around the house, couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Messaged the company after 2 days and was like, "Look, this hasn't been delivered." Da 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 da. And then I went out, and whilst I was walking past the front of my house, realised they'd like wedged it between the outside light and the sort of roof of the porch. So quite out of view.
Yeah.
And they hadn't put a card through the door to say, "Hey, we missed you, and we've stuffed it in this." Like, little...
And they'd not taken a photo of it or anything, because that's a popular thing. Now,
yeah, well,
it?
I did
a photo where they've left it.
I emailed the company back with a photo, and I said, "Look, I'm really sorry, but..." This is what's happened to it. And they were like, they emailed back and just said, "Oh, we've all had a good laugh at that, you know," because it was just wedged. And I didn't see it for 2 days. It had been out like in the elements for 2 days.
Yeah.
And no one had nicked it. But I guess if I couldn't see it, then...
Well, yeah. Potential thief isn't going to see it.
Yeah. So there you go. COVID and delivery. I wonder if once kind of life goes back to, well, in quotes, normal, whether or not the deliveries will go back to just being blokes in marked vans.
I don't know.
Or whether I'll still get Jeff from around the corner in his Nissan Serena.
The hobbyist couriers.
Yeah.
I don't think we've described it particularly well there. It doesn't seem like something many people would enjoy doing, so I don't know. I can see the appeal of being like a rural courier, if you know everyone and it's nice and easy.
I think for most people, especially in my situation, it's just double bubble, isn't it? It's just...
Yeah.
I could go out and do a miserable job that I sort of probably try and switch off for all day. You know, and then at the end of the month, I've basically doubled my money because you're still getting your furlough payments. Well, that's that. Wow. Next time we speak, we'll be, what, 2 weeks? Well, we're supposed to see each other in 2 weeks.
We are, yes.
We have arranged a rendezvous. Oh, we've got some new t-shirts to try on.
Oh yeah,
from I've got mine out and it's really lovely actually, and it fits me really well.
Good.
I just haven't worn it because it's not been nice enough weather really for t-shirts. So probably wear it.
It's not quite there yet, is it?
Yeah, we could go out twinning in our Leadfoot t-shirts.
We could. No, I'm looking forward to that. That was a happy coincidence, I think, wasn't it? You won a competition on Instagram?
Yeah, I won a t-shirt and got chatting to the chaps who run the company and kind of said about our podcast, and he sent us both one. So we'll get those tried on and show everyone what they look like, because for me, they're kind of a proper motorsport enthusiast kind of company who make t-shirts in kind of iconic racing liveries with the word Leadfoot instead of whatever the livery was, to obviously bypass copyright
infringement. To not use the brand name.
But no, you know, great. Those who know will know.
Yeah.
And I think they're quite cool. So yeah, looking forward to
seeing
what they're like. It looks like good quality, but we'll see. We'll try them on and let everyone know.
I think that's about everything. Unless there's anything else you want to talk about. There was Monaco Historic this weekend, which was great. John Lacey in an old 70s Ferrari. That was epic, wasn't it?
Yeah, had a really good battle. I wasn't watching it, but I've watched it back. And it was just a race-long battle for the lead. Marco Werner was in the Lotus, sort of all over the back of John Lacey in a Niki Lauda Ferrari. which is just,
it doesn't get much better.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
Around Monaco on a beautiful sunny day, it got to the point where the commentators were just saying, "I don't really know what to say now. This is just perfection."
It was Hindy on one of the ones I was watching.
Yes,
John Hindy.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was John who said it. Sorry, we're not commentating much.
He manages to commentate on 24 hours of Le Mans every year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he doesn't run out of stuff to say.
It was just such good. I think with Monaco, it's very tight, and I think the Lotus is clearly quicker than the Ferrari, but there's overtaking spots. So they were just nose to tail for about 14 laps, and then Marco Werner ran into the back of Jean Alesi. And
well, it looked like Alesi perhaps just missed a gear change or something, because the speed difference in them was such that it seemed unusual for the Lotus to have taken the car out quite so quickly, because every other lap the Ferrari was getting away a little bit sort of in the acceleration phase. So I think maybe Alesi sort of snuffed a gear or something, though, I'm not sure.
They did disqualify Werner, Alesi was still maintaining, I think as of today, that there was no problem, he was just rammed into.
Oh really? Okay.
But obviously, watching this amazing spectacle and then seeing like a priceless 70s Formula One car get smashed into the wall was not the best way to end it. And then the race actually finished under a red flag because somebody binned a really lovely Durex Surtees.
Yeah.
But it's nice to kind of see these things still getting ragged around, you know? They're not just got out, rolled out of the garage, polished, and stood there stationary. Mm. You know, these guys are out there smashing these cars around Monaco.
It's really good to see. And you say about the value, but I do wonder if it's not necessarily the case, because you know, they're racing cars. They've been crashed a load of times in period and been fixed.
Yeah.
It is just metal, isn't it?
Aluminium.
Really.
Steel.
And I'm sure there's, as there is for sports car racing of the same era, I'm sure there's a thriving industry. Not quite as thriving, so aren't as many of them, but I'm sure there's an industry there for building, you know, replacement parts and the odd recreated part here and there. So I don't think I'd worry too much about having a crash with one. It's just so good to see them being driven properly.
Yeah, but they should just get the current F1 drivers. Like, the Monaco Grand Prix should be, forget about the modern day F1 cars. We're going to put
you historic.
in cars from the 70s and see how, I mean, apart from Nikita Mazepin, obviously, but he should probably sit that one out, but. Yeah, the others that can actually drive, that'd be a brilliant.
They would, yeah.
So the Monaco Grand Prix is not for another month. So do they keep all the streets kind of...
I was wondering that. I'm not sure. I think not the Armco, because... And it's a very, very busy area. They can't just have the roads closed for that long. I think maybe the grandstands and stuff stay there. And the pit, because the entire pit lane is all built and put away again for the race season. So, yeah, I guess it probably stays. A lot of it does anyway. Yeah. So if you were to go there now, you'd probably have quite an authentic lap to drive around.
Yeah, because they have all the barriers up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seemed... I would have thought they'd done it slightly closer to their Grand Prix date, but...
Mm. No, I had that same thought. I was quite surprised to see that it was that far away. I don't know. I don't know how many changes there are between now and then.
But yeah, some incredible cars took down there, and obviously all shipped in and from various corners of the world and driven.
Yeah, it was good to see.
Driven reasonably well, and like I said, Jean Alesi, what a driver! Great.
58, I think he is.
Yeah, but sort of always sort of seems quite cool and youthful.
Mm.
Although he did look a little bit stocky getting out of the car after he got shunted off, he kind of stayed. He didn't kind of vacate the track.
He just sort of stood around.
He stood at the side of the track, kind of.
At a live circuit around a blind start finish straight.
You're just thinking, Jean, come on, you 60 odd years old, get off the track.
Yeah. I know you're pissed off about this, but please. And just the guys who were driving the Bugattis and whatnot around earlier in the day, they looked to be sort of, you know, racing properly. And I think, God, you really, really don't want to be having an accident in those.
No, Monaco's a pretty easy track to make an error at. And there's no runoff areas, no gravel traps, no. It's just you're straight into the barrier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolute, you know, balls of steel from those guys.
For sure.
But yeah, it'd be really good to see the contemporary F1 grid just be like, right, this race you're going to be racing some old 70s or 60s machinery. Crack on.
I wonder if some of them have never raced with a manual gearbox, potentially.
Well, certainly not with a stick.
Well, yeah, that's just about it then for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening, as ever. If you've liked what you've listened to, and if you got to the end, thank you very much. And if you've liked it, then please do click on a rating on iTunes. If you want to give us a 4 or 5-star rating and a comment, a review comment, that would be really, really appreciated. That does a lot for the algorithm, and it helps just put AutoChat in front of a few more eyeballs and hopefully get some more listeners. So thank you again, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.